Ramsey TV.
I think I'm just gonna let the music run out, if that's okay. I don't want to say anything during the music. I'm not in the mood for it because of the topic, so I'm talking through the music anyway. All right, be quiet. Is it over yet? Because I can't hear it. Is it over yet? Yeah. Now, all good, okay. Welcome to another edition of MZTV. I'm going to talk about a difficult topic. Today, the topic is evil. The title of this show is The Outcome of Evil. I've told you before what evil means. It's the Hebrew word ra, R-A, and it means to break. As I told you before, there's no moral bias to the word itself. By the way, I'm not trying to be Hugh Hefner here with a shirt. I'm missing a button right here. Okay, I can prove it to you. I have a button here, but then I got this. So I'm just going to do this. So, all right. The word evil means to break. So the word itself has no moral bias. If a rioter or a looter breaks the glass of a building in order to steal every Apple product in the building, then that person has done an evil, but it's also a sin because the motive is to steal stuff. If somebody takes a club and breaks the glass of a store window, let's say, in order to get people out because it's on fire and the door is locked, and the motive is to save people's lives, then that would not be a sin because the motive is good. But I'd like to point this out, that both individuals performed an evil on the glass, because that's what evil means, to break. I'm just reporting. To shatter or to break. So, evil itself is not a sin. What makes it a sin or not a sin is motive. Why are you doing the evil? It ought to go without saying, but I should say it, that God says that he breaks, but he also heals, right? He kills, he makes alive. God does evil, that is, he breaks, but he does it with a good motive so that he can bring something out of it. For instance, in my example, people alive out of a building who would die otherwise, the breaking is necessary. So it's not a sin. So God can break things, and it's not a sin because of what he has in mind down the road. Lock that in. So I got a comment yesterday on by a gentleman. And I don't blame this guy for this comment. Let me just deal with the first point. He brought up the verse, I'll put the reference down here, that it never entered God's mind. This is God speaking. Never entered my mind that the Israelites should sacrifice their children to Moloch, the false god. Yeah, sacrificing your children for anything is a bad idea. It's a sin, especially to Moloch. I don't recommend it. But the question was, in light of yesterday's show about the human street and the God street, the man wanted to know, did God, when God says it never entered his mind, that's true, isn't it? It never entered God's mind, I would have to say. And I did, I answered this gentleman, and I said, it's the same figure of speech used in Genesis when God is looking for Adam, and he says, Adam, where are you? No one in their wildest imaginations think thinks that God actually can't find something. I don't think anyone in their wildest imaginations would think that something never entered God's mind. That's what people say. Well, never entered my mind. No, people say that. God, that's not God. So God has come down to visit human street. He's left God's street, come down to visit human street, and he's condemning this sinful act. And he says it never entered his mind. That is for the people to do it compared to not doing it, relative to not doing it. But on the God street, you remember the axiom number one from yesterday? People have roles to play, but they're all doing it under the influence of God. So I pointed that out to this gentleman. But I hear his heart in the matter, and his heart in the matter is, this is a horrible evil. How can you justify it, Sender? How can you say that these individuals were under the influence of God? You see, God, even when God comes down to visit human street, he's everywhere, so he still inhabits God's street. He doesn't stop being the one who influences everything. But when he comes to visit human street, he talks to us. He converses with us. He says things like, oh, I regret that I ever created humanity. Adam, where are you? This never entered my mind. He comes across like kind of a groping, wondering, ignorant individual. He's not. But it helps us to hear him talk like this, especially when we're young in the faith. If we're not mature, it helps us to think that God is somewhat like us. It helps us that God works evil. He breaks things through intermediaries. He does it through Satan many times. But he never stops inhabiting God's street. I have to remind you of that. But it's helpful when you're young in the faith to see that, to hear God speaking like this. But when you're ready in the faith and you become mature in the faith and God has prepared you for it, he calls you back behind the curtain and he tells those who maybe think that human street is the only street that exists here, he tells them, no, there is a God street. There is an absolute viewpoint above all of this on earth, and that I am the one influencing it all. I am the one out of whom, through whom, and into whom all this is. And that's a difficult thing to swallow. That's why those who are immature in the faith, they can't take it. Even when you learn that all is out of, through, and into God, Romans 11:36, it's still tough to take. This is why I'm sympathetic to those who cry and struggle over evil, over the breaking of things. But today, I'm going to offer you a comfort for this. And I'm going to do it in the form of Joseph, son of Jacob. I will say that as terrible as it is that in the past children were sacrificed to Moloch, and the man who objected to this thing, who thought it was horrible, who really was repulsed by the idea that any of this could be influenced by God, he presented this to me as the ultimate evil, the worst thing he could think of, the worst thing in the scriptures. And I had to remind him, and I did, that no, sir, the worst thing that ever happened was the crucifixion of the Son of God. The crucifixion of God's own Son. The torture. The humiliation. The illegal arrest. The hate. The jealousy behind it. The evil motives. The evil intent behind it. And again, the breaking of an innocent human being, although he was God's son. Actually, that makes it worse. His mother at the cross looking up at him, at his naked body writhing on the stake. I'm sorry, sir, but that makes the sacrifice of children to Moloch look like a Boy Scout overnight camping trip. It's terrible. Don't misunderstand me. It's horrible. But this, what I just described to you, is infinitely worse on so many levels. It would take a week of shows to develop how much worse that evil was. And I always point this out to people, and I tell them that this was a huge breaking. The Son of God was broken on the stake. I used to cry and cry and cry as a kid on Good Friday thinking about it. The innocent man dying such a horrible death. But then, yes, he dies. He's put into the tomb. His mother is overcome by grief. Disciples run away. They're confused. They don't know what's happening. They don't know what to make of it. They had all their hopes and dreams pinned on this one. But 3 days later, he rises from the dead. Happy day. Nice reunion. And then we see that through this one, we come to learn, is the salvation of the entire world. This is the equivalent of breaking a window to get people out. Except instead of 2 dozen people escaping from a smoke-filled building, we have billions and billions and billions of people escaping from sin and death. And the portal through which they come is the death, the entombment, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And they all come. All of humanity, everyone who came out of Adam, comes through the breaking and the rebuilding. There it is. The breaking and the rebuilding of Jesus Christ. And his ascent to the right hand of God in a position of all power and authority. And even we, weak human beings, can now see how that evil can be justified. Can't you? If you were standing at the cross that day, you can't imagine how this could possibly be good. In any sense, any sense. It's a disaster. It's the worst thing that ever happened. You're crying. You're shaking your fist at God. I get it. To be expected. It's only human. But then when you're shown, eventually might take a little while. I mean, you do see him rising from the dead after 3 days. That's good news. But then when you hear through Paul that through this one, everyone comes to God, this is the avenue God chose, then you say, well, actually, it's a good thing that that happened. Oh, how can something be evil and good at the same time? It's the same reason that the human street and the God street operate, run simultaneously and concurrently also at the same time. It's the same reason. It's bad on the human street as you're standing at the cross watching this man die. Very bad, very bad. It's good if you're on God's street seeing the big picture, seeing the absolute viewpoint of where this thing goes. It's the outcome, it's the motive behind why God did it, why God did it. When you see that, and if you could taste an ounce of the joy at the consummation of the eons, when everything is returned to God, then the horror and the evil of the cross will have become so soft-focused, so, in a way, dim as far as the heartbreak of it, that it will be something for which you will be so thankful. In fact, Jesus Christ today is thankful for it. Of course. He had his moment of doubt and pain in the Garden of Gethsemane. So that tells you that this gentleman and anyone who cries over evil and maybe shakes their fist at God, don't feel bad about it. That's what happens when you're going through the thing. I do the same thing. People say, Martin, you say that if the worst evil, the crucifixion of Christ, is justified, then all lesser evils, including sacrificing children to Moloch, it's a lesser evil relative to the crucifixion of Christ. You say, well, even those evils will be justified. Of course, because Christ, the breaking of him, is the pattern of how God operates. He doesn't operate any other way. He kills in order to make alive. He breaks in order to heal and make it stronger and better. Even human bones, when they break, they grow back stronger and better. The divine principle, we even see it in the human body, in physiology. It's a principle. It works every time. It's God's modus operandi. Doesn't do it any other way. So I'm talking to a friend today. And this person, like many of you, I'm talking to many people here. What I'm about to say is going to bring healing and comfort to many people. And this friend of mine, when she was small, she suffered abuse at the hands of her parents. And I'm going to try not to cry when I talk about this, because I was raised by loving, considerate, kind parents who built me up and did not tear me down. And I cannot imagine the horror. I can't imagine the evil in the mind of a parent who would purposely hurt, abuse, insult, belittle a child, let alone their own child. It's just beyond my... ability to imagine myself in that situation. But because I was not in that situation, that doesn't preclude me from commenting on the situation, because I've been through other things that probably, relative to my experience, were to me just as bad, just as devastating, so that I wanted to kill myself. I wanted God to kill me. I understand the breaking. I get it. So this friend's telling me this. And I don't blame anyone for recoiling at first blush, at first consideration, from associating God with something so evil. I don't blame anybody, okay? It's your first instinct. Please tell me God had nothing to do with this. I understand, and I'm sympathetic. But my template, my pattern for dealing with this, and I struggle with it myself, but I've overcome it because I've learned from the crucifixion of Christ, because that's the evil of all evils. And if you can learn from that, then you can apply it to everything else, to all lesser evils. If you see that God was indeed influencing the entire passion of our Lord down to every detail, to the point that he prophesied of it 1,000 years before, right up to the betrayal of Judas, right up to him being crucified in between two thieves, right up every detail, by his stripes we are healed. You realize that this thing was inspired and developed by God himself. And when that seems horrible, it seems like child abuse, until you realize that he did this in cooperation with his son willingly obeying his father's will, knowing that there was a promise of great glory, such glory that when it is finally come to fruition, it is immeasurably, immeasurably superior to the evil, so that when the glory comes, the evil will seem but a distant dream in the night. and that everything that came out of the breaking, that is the healing, will justify the evil, will justify it. And it will be seen that that thing that happened was evil and good at the same time. It was evil on the human street, but it was good on the divine street, on the God street, because God intended it for good. God meant it for good. And that is going to bring me to a passage about Joseph's brothers. So my friend is talking to me, and the temptation for anyone is to recoil against God being involved in this. And this is what I said to my friend, and I'll say it to you. I'll say it to anyone who has suffered abuse or any other kind of evil. I said to her, can you imagine the day when, after you are glorified, you become a glorified daughter of God, and your parents appear at the great white throne to be judged by God, and there, for the first time, their evil is exposed to their hearts. They see what they have done. They look upon the one whom they pierced, their own daughter, and they beat their breast in anguish and in repentance, weeping tears of regret, of pain, finally coming through the trial of the great white throne, through the judgment of the great white throne, at the supervision of the very daughter whom they persecuted, crying, weeping, begging forgiveness. What is this picture? This picture is Joseph, sold into slavery by his own brothers, put in prison in Egypt for 27 years, blackmailed in Egypt, in jail, suffering God knows what deprivations. 27 years. This is sibling abuse at its highest level. Apart from the crucifixion of Christ, that was sibling abuse also. So here we have Joseph, tormented by his captors for 27 years. You know the story. I'm not going to go through it. He eventually comes out of prison, becomes the second in command in Egypt, and through him, he delivers millions of people from famine. This is a type of Christ, obviously, a pre-type of Christ, where being sold out by his own kin, his own brothers, he suffers. And he dies figuratively, and he raises figuratively from the dead, and he becomes powerful. He sits on high just like Christ did. And now, those who persecuted him, those who sold him into slavery, come to his feet begging for bread, because now they're starving in their own land, and he's in charge of all the grain in Egypt, and nobody eats but by him. And my friend now, at the great white throne, given great authority, great power by God, because of her being chosen before the disruption of the world, her parents come now being found in want, being destitute, coming to be broken at her feet, as the brothers of Joseph eventually came and begged food from the king of Egypt, not realizing who he was, the great prince of Egypt, Joseph, not realizing at first who he was. And they're begging and they're crying and they're saying, please spare us. You know what? And the worst part for them was when they realized who he was. That's when the real breaking happened. They're already begging for bread just because he's a great man, and they're bowing to him and they're groveling and they're begging. But when they found out who he was, then they feared for their lives, because they knew that he could be one who could wreak revenge on them. He could have them executed instantly, or worse, torture them in the worst possible ways before killing them. And he did try them. He sent them back to their father, planted the cup in their bag, brought them back. He took them through all kinds of anguish. This is the equivalent of those who have done wrong to us at the great white throne. They too will be broken. They will be undergoing pain, trial, and they will break, and they will come to a weeping realization of what they've done. And Joseph's sons eventually came to this. And they found out who Joseph identified himself. Then scripture says they feared greatly. And that is an understatement. And when my friends, parents are at the great white throne, and when they look up and realize that this is their daughter whom they abused, they will fear for their lives. But as Joseph looks down at his brothers and he realizes that they have come to a true repentance, a true feeling sorry for what they've done, a true breaking, a heartfelt regret, so that they loathe the very day they were born and could have done such evil, and when they are fearing the worst, fearing for their lives, knowing that they deserve death, what do they get instead? Joseph lifts them up. And he embraces them, and he hugs them, and he says, "You meant this for evil, but God meant it for good." And God meant it for good, and he kisses them, and he hugs them. And there was a reunion, and there was such joy in everyone's hearts. And the brothers now, they can't be more in love with this kid. They cannot be more in love with him. And do you think, how do you think Joseph feels now? Feeling the embrace, the love, and the warmth of those who once persecuted him. And now they realize how right he was and how great he is. And my friends, parents, when they realize what they have done and their daughter reaches down, lifts up their chins and says, "Come to me. Come to me and I will demonstrate to you the grace and the love of God. You meant it for evil." That's the human street, but God meant it for good. The same act, the crucifixion, you meant it for evil, God meant it for good. The selling of Joseph into slavery, you meant it for evil, God meant it for good. The abuse of this beautiful girl, they meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. How could that be? Because of this reunion, because of this joy and this celebration. And this great moment of effusive love that could not have come any other way but by the breaking. And I told, and as I told this to my friend, I could tell that her heart was full of just thinking of such a moment that could possibly happen in the future. I said, "It won't possibly happen. It will happen." And I could, and then I said to her, seeing that this is true and beyond, what the picture I have painted for you, the reality will be so beyond what I have said, what is now filling your heart with expectation and joy of this reunion of those who have truly repented and you being able to show them the love and grace of God. It's better than what I said. Considering all this, now, do you think that in that time you will then look back at the time when you suffered, at the time when you were broken, and can you see that this momentous, joyous event could not have come without that? And I challenged her and I said to her, "I think that when you're in that moment, you will say that pain, that breaking was justified if this is the result. If this is the result, then yeah, I can kind of sort of see how from that perspective, that evil was justified. And from the perspective of the salvation of all, the crucifixion of Christ is justified only in light of the salvation of all. Only in light of this great reunion between parents and daughter can that evil be justified. Only in light of the salvation of millions from starvation and the raising up of Joseph and the reunion with his brothers and his father coming to Egypt and the family being blessed, only in light can the breaking, can that awful trial in the valley of the shadow of death be justified. But it will, and it does, and all evil follows this path, all evil, because the crucifixion of Christ is the template for it. That's the pattern. That is the pattern, and that is the outcome of every evil. And the outcome, the glory of it, I promise you, this will overshadow. It won't even be worthy to be compared to the thing that made it possible, the breaking. The healing is much better, much stronger, much greater than the breaking. And when you are standing in the glory and basking in the light and the heat of that glory, I promise you, you will look back at the evil and you will say to yourself, I thank God that that happened. And if we can even come to an inkling of this now, and maybe this thought then will help us even while we're going through these things. Maybe this will help us where maybe we won't totally be able to accept it and be happy about it, but maybe, just maybe, it'll plant a seed in our mind that this thing has come for a purpose and the outcome will be glorious.